This is Changeling the Podcast.
Puka here, coming at you with a solo minisode. I'll be talking briefly about The Darkening Sky, a set of scenarios for Dark Ages Revised. This includes a chapter on the Fae, therefore I wanted to cover it as the only canon material for Dark Ages Fae outside of the core book. I'm also recording this on a weekday morning before work, so I apologize in advance for any missteps or bleariness in my voice. So apparently this was a cancelled book originally intended to be released near the end of the Dark Ages run. The scenarios and crossover material are structured around the actual, real-life eclipse of 1230 AD that spanned England and Scandinavia. I sometimes roll my eyes a little bit at the trope of eclipses lasting for hours that you occasionally run across in fantasy, but okay, sure. So the book was eventually published by Onyx Path around the same era as the abandoned revised convention books for Mage, so around 2014, I believe. Each of the Dark Ages lines gets its own chapter, and while we mainly care about the Fae for this podcast, we start with a frame story involving multiple lines. It's set in Wales, although the eclipse didn't actually occur there, I'll point out, in a valley where the old ways still hold sway, whatever that might mean. There's a druid who peers into the spirit world and sees all manner of chaos before a deer spirit warns him to get his villagers to safety. So he goes back and informs them. They run for the local lord's keep, with two of their number becoming werewolves along the way as the eclipse happens. Then everyone gets inside and they discover, oh no, the guards are vampires! But then the werewolves arrive to defend the villagers, so it's all very chaotic and whatnot, but sets the tone for Dark Ages crossover. After that, there's a foreword that points to the phrase, "The Oath Truce Falls with the Darkening Sky," indicating that this will mark the resumption of the Fae's War of Seasons, along with all the other stuff going on. Apparently, the eclipse idea was introduced as an Easter egg throughout the Dark Ages revised lines, culminating in that quote from Dark Ages Fae, which we did see when we did our review of that book, and the success of the 20th anniversary allowed some of these long-canceled books to return. This one is, we're told, much different from the original concept. But anyway, the Fae portion. So page 13 has a description of what the story in this book will be about for them, and it is as follows. As winter winds its way into spring, the Fae prepare again for a war that never truly ended. Rumors abound in strongholds across the British Isles that one of the courts has found a weapon no one has ever used before, one that can turn the tide in their favor unquestioningly. No one knows what it is yet or what it does, but in the days before the May 14th eclipse that will signal the resumption of hostilities, four of the major players in the seasonal courts will watch their needs and desires intertwine, and only a handful of Fae will have the power to stop the coming disaster, or push it to its disastrous zenith. I don't know how I feel about using disastrous so soon after disaster, but okay. So then when we get to the Fae chapter, there's opening fiction. It's a heartwarming story about a spring court messenger from Carter Haw, for any folklore fans, enjoying a hot plate of freshly cooked priest. Aww. The basic plot is that the characters are guardians for a caravan from the court of the firstborn Melusine, who's a winter fae living in Brittany. And she's sending the cargo to the firstborn Tam Lin, her former rival, in northern Wales. So the connection to Carter Haw, for anyone unfamiliar with the ballad, Tam Lin was abducted by the fairies, but escaped and now lingers at Carter Haw, where he tempts the young maidens, or something like that, until Janet the human rescues him. I forget the full details, but it's relevant for this storyteller character, and there's lots of writing about Tam Lin, both in Changeling and in fantasy in general. Anyway, Melusine and Tam Lin have joined forces against a mutual foe, Anonyme Peg Powler, who's another folklore connection. She's a hag in British folklore, and this joining of forces has eased their differences. So she's sending him this caravan with mysterious contents. Rumor has it that it's a powerful weapon for Tam Lin to use against Peg Powler. There is what they call a chronicle map, which is quite spoiler heavy, so I'm not going to give a lot of details from it, but I will give the broad strokes in the first couple of paragraphs. The characters are chosen by their superiors, either by their court or by the patrons, to accompany a shipment from the manor of Melusine in Brittany to the camp belonging to Tam Lin in Wales. Whether or not they are used to being messengers and couriers, they are told that they're the only ones who can be trusted with this job. Before even starting the assignment, the characters begin hearing rumors that what they're accompanying is a weapon of immense power. If the characters investigate the rumors before traveling, they will discover that though very few facts can be found, plenty of stories about what the shipment could be are traded around campfires. From riches untold to enchanted swords to assistance from some outside agent, no two people agree on what the characters will actually be guarding. Further, there are sinister whispers as to why Melusine would engage in trade with Tamlin. When they arrive at the manor, however, the characters discover that the cargo in need of guarding does not appear to be any recognizable weapon. And I'm leaving it open-ended in case anyone listening wants to play or run this game. After that, we get a brief overview of the state of the courts as the Oath Truce is about to fall. Spring wants to see change and is therefore tired of the war. Summer is so ready for it, but they didn't mind the orderliness of peace in the meantime. Autumn hopes for peace, and Winter just seeks advantage, whatever comes. The Solstice Court and the patrons might want to sabotage the caravan so no one gets it. There are some crossover options for the story here, too. Werewolves are guarding the caravan in exchange for the return of kinfolk turned changeling, who were kidnapped in the first place to find ways around the problems of baptism. Inquisitors are obviously trying to stop the caravan. Magi may wish to study the weapon, and there's a wholesale recasting of the scenario using vampires instead of fae. Then we get some storyteller characters. Melusine is a winter firstborn associated with chill rivers and springs, who's getting back in touch with her coldest self in advance of the Oath Truce ending. Peg Powler is a solstice inanime strongly associated with humanity. She rose from the fungi and such that sprouted from a crone's corpse. And she used to be Melusine's mercenary until she accidentally slew her mistress's child. Tamlin is presented as a former squire of Melusine's bound by oaths, who slipped her grip to join the Spring Court. He rules over Carter Hall, where he has a mortal wife named Janet, who's slowly becoming a changeling. There are some other minor ones that would spoil the plot a bit, but there's also a bard who tries not to speak much because the mists get into his voice and prophecy spills out. Not sure if that's supposed to be True Thomas or anything, but naturally, he's the one who frequently repeats the line, "The Oath Truce will fall with the darkening sky," throughout the story. So it's a 12-scene chronicle that could probably be played over 2 or 3 sessions. The scenes are kind of a mix of types for some variety. There's political intrigue, combat, mystery. There's the assignment of the mission that potentially gets the group together. Then the start of the journey from Brittany to Wales. The slow realization of what the caravan's cargo actually is. A fight as they cross the English Channel. Lots of branching paths and options are provided dependent on the choices characters might make, which I appreciate. A diagram might have been helpful, though, since so many of those choices are predicated on the interactions between the party and the main storyteller characters. The crux of it is that they get caught up in the power struggle between these three fae and wield outsized influence on the outcome as the keepers of the weapon they're transporting. The Eclipse connection is that on the day of, there's the potential for a battle which could ignite or avert the renewed War of the Seasons, raising the stakes for players to decide how they want to handle it. Because any battle, no matter how seemingly insignificant, such as a squabble between these random fae, could reignite the powder keg. At the end, there are a couple potent treasures included, and I actually had someone bring these up in a discussion recently on Discord, which was surprising. I hadn't thought this book made much of an impression on people. But among those, without going into too much detail, the caravan's weapon, its nature, and what it represents is sort of an inflection point for a shift in how fae interact with the world. It's almost like the discovery of nukes. The principles behind the creation of the weapon opens the fae's eyes to new possibilities that they use in a kind of arms race, failing to realize that they are just pushing themselves faster towards their own destruction. The afterword to the story proper flat out says that when the Oath Truce falls, the shattering begins. The new form of magical battle that they have access to begins fundamentally changing the Fae landscape, and they begin fundamentally changing themselves to adapt, beginning the process of becoming modern changelings because most of the firstborn can't handle it. Now, this is a rather different kind of setup than the historical bits of Changeling the Dreaming we get, but does this shoehorning of canonicity work at all? I think Josh and I probably have different degrees to which we'd be willing to accept it. I am at least able to appreciate that they made an effort to align the two. It vaguely fits my headcanon between Changeling the Dreaming and Dark Age's Fae enough to serve as a starting point for me to think further about how I want those two to align. And then after all that, we get an epilogue tale with an Inquisitrix and werewolves. Glorious. Like I said before, I didn't do enough revised Dark Ages to really get into it and its crossovers, but for Dark Ages Fae in particular, this is a solid enough story. Even if you leave out the metaplot connections and don't address the whole Oath Truce question, It feels more robust than the sample story in the core book. Of course, I still feel like Dark Ages Fae has a lot of unfilled gaps, but for that, there's the storyteller's fault. In the meantime, this is a skeleton on which I can try to build my own idea of a Dark Ages Fae game, so adequate for that purpose, I suppose. That's about all I have to say on the book, but the link to purchase it online will be available in the show notes to this episode, along with our social media links as usual. If you'd like to join in the conversation around Changeling, feel free to get in touch by emailing us at podcast@changelingthepodcast.com or join our lively Discord community at www.discord.me/ctp. You can also support us by signing up for our Patreon at www.patreon.com/changelingthepodcast. We appreciate reviews left on the podcasting platform of your greatest convenience, and do tell your friends, allies, and oath truce-bound courtmates about our show. Thanks for listening, watch out for eclipses, because there's one coming up as of this recording, and until next time, keep on dreaming.